This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
I'm not a player, I just crush a lot.
Still got what you're looking for.
Hello, Place to Be Nation. My name is Chad Campbell, and this is the latest episode of PTB in Play. Tonight, we are going to be counting down the top 10 board games, according to my wife. So, what better person to talk about that than my wife? She is here tonight. This is her podcast debut. Her name is Jennifer. Jennifer, how's it going?
Going good.
All right. So I guess to get started, talk about starting to play board games more and more. I can't, as I've discussed on the podcast before, I can't really remember how I got into them or how I first found the world of strategy board games, but sort of took a liking to it. We started playing more and more in Christmas break of 2013, and then really kind of ramped up from there all throughout 2014. So I've found it to be a pretty good activity for us to do together, where we're both sort of interested in it. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
I kind of always say, like, when me and Jennifer first started dating, she told me she really liked sports. That was a long time ago. Now that we've been married for almost, sports is not usually on her agenda, but we watch a lot of TV shows together, some movies here and there, but one thing we found with board kind of brings our two interests together. So, Jennifer, what is your kind of favorite playing board games?
You broke up, so I didn't hear your question.
What is your favorite thing about playing board games?
Just the strategies differ almost every time. Sometimes doing things one way might work, but the next time it's not. And you really got to try to figure out your opponent and where their head's at, too.
Yeah, I think it's a, for us, it's a good mixture of us having to think and use our noggin to think strategically, with also some friendly. One thing I should mention, we did play Wii. For a little while we were dating mostly, and I enjoyed that, but I think we both prefer the board interaction and kind of the variety. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So we're going to start. Jennifer has made her top 10, but I think she has a couple of honorable mentions. And kind of the game within the game that we're going to play is I've also made a top 10 list that I think Jennifer will pick, and we'll see how good I do. I would say at this point in time, we've probably played, wouldn't you think, maybe 100 games together?
Yeah.
Something around that. So we're pretty... I would say, am I still breaking up?
Yeah.
Because I can hear me really good. What about now?
Yeah.
Sound good?
Yeah. It's like every eighth or ninth word, I can't, it like stops.
How about now? Is that good?
Yeah.
All right, well, let's just start over. I'll give a quick introduction, and then we'll just run into it. So,
you're breaking up again.
I'm breaking up again?
Mm-hmm.
That sucks. That probably means our Wi-Fi can't handle us being on a phone call together.
Are you X out of everything else?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not on nothing except for this. How about now? Still or no?
We'll have to see. You have to, like, say, like, it's like every tenth word or so.
Okay, well, let me just start over, and if I'm breaking up, just interrupt me, okay?
Okay.
All right, 3, 2. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. My name is Campbell, and this is the latest episode of PTB in Play. Tonight, I'm joined by my wife, Jennifer. Say hello, Jennifer.
Hey, guys.
And Jennifer tonight will be counting down her top 10 favorite board games. So we thought this would kind of perspective of, I wouldn't necessarily say a casual perspective, but someone that, you know, I'd say between me and Jennifer, I, you know, watch the YouTube. I'm on BoardGameGeek.com. I'm definitely more entrenched into the hobby. But Jennifer has taken quite a liking to board games, so this can kind of be a hopefully a good primer list for games to play with your significant other. Jennifer, before we get started, kind of say a few words of why you like playing board games.
I like the fact that it's different every time, and every game you have to play it different sometimes, and you really got to figure out where your opponent's headed and try to outsmart them, and I really feel like it helps my inductive and deductive reasoning skills in the game world, but also in the real world, because you have to like calculate other people's moves sometimes mentally.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think games between me and Jennifer, we've had some hobbies that we've shared together, including watching a lot of TV shows and the like, but board games have really hit the sweet spot for us just in our relationship and being a activity that we can do together where there is some mental stimulation there, but also some competitiveness. I don't think we generally have a problem in going after each other in board games. No things after the fact. So it really kind of works out for us that board games hit the sweet spot for us. We played some video games, like we played a lot on the Wii system, but I think we found that board games are much more kind of with the social interaction. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay, so Jennifer, top 10 list, and kind of the game within the game that we're going to play is I've also made a top 10 list of the games that I think she'll select. Now, I would say most of the games that she would select, I would classify as a intro strategy. I don't know her list at all, so this is just me going out on a limb. But I would say most of the games that she's going to select here will range from what I'd consider an intro strategy game to a medium weight strategy game. So that's kind of the area we generally play in. So there'll be no Twilight Imperium 3s or any games I can safely say that take, you know, hours to complete for that.
Yeah.
Okay, so no really heavy, what would be considered heavy games. But I would say by this point, Jennifer is pretty well-versed in the video game, board game arena, and has now played roughly 100 board games, different board games. So I assume this top 10 list will probably, if you're kind of casual into the hobby, may feature some games you haven't heard of or don't know too much about. Let's get started. I think you had some honorable mentions, you said. So I guess just mention a couple of the honorable mentions and why you like the games that you selected for those.
I don't know. I think I should save my honorary mentions for the end because I don't want to give anything away to you.
Okay. All right. So you see how it's... I see how this is starting out. All right. Well, then jump right into your number 10.
All right. My number 10 is actually two games. I find them very similar. My top 10 I had put down for Stone Age. However, this weekend we played another game, Marco Polo, which is very, very similar to Stone Age. So if you don't really like the theme of an old-time man cave type feel, then Marco Polo is definitely like a little bit of a step up, maybe more challenging than Stone Age. I really enjoy playing that one.
Okay, so already we're cheating by selecting two games. And I didn't have Stone Age on there. I thought about it. I thought you would like that one. So, just kind of a brief reference, Stone Age came out in 2008. And it's a pretty popular in the strategy board game arena. It's got quite a good buzz. It's been pretty sustainable. Now, The Voyages of Marco Polo came out last year in 2015. And it kind of came out of nowhere, I would say. It was games that there wasn't a lot of buzz surrounding it. It was kind of through first-time designers, and nobody knew much about it, and it's gotten reviews. Like Jennifer said, we played it for the first time this weekend. She actually got it for me for my birthday, and I had a blast with that one, too. So the basic premise of both of those games is they are in the worker placement genre. With Voyages of Marco Polo, it's actually a little variant of that where it's dice placement. You're placing your dice on the board. But in Stone Age, you're placing your little men out and making babies, gathering resources, tools, and stuff like that. So both of them, I think, are excellent choices. I think Marco Polo, I agree with you, Jennifer, more complex. It's almost like a master's degree of Stone Age. Like if you've played Stone Age, which we played Stone Age, I bet we've played it probably 8 or 9 times, which for us is, you know, a decent amount because we have a good many games. So it's up there in our most kind of one of our most played games. But yeah, no problem with both of those. Those are two good choices, and I am excited to play Marco Polo more. And it might actually, I think it has a chance to crack my own personal top 10. Stone Age would probably right now be on the outside looking in of my top 10, but Marco Polo, I really enjoyed it. So that's number 10, Stone Age, which is a Marco Polo, kind of the worker placement genre.
So would you have me down for 10?
Well, I don't want to say that because it may be higher on the list. I'm just counting. If it's on your list, I'm counting that as a point. So I didn't get a point for that. It was on there. And when I told you earlier tonight, I switched out another game after I made my list. The game I took off was Stone Age. And I actually see a game now I should have put on my list, but I didn't, that I bet you'll say. But go ahead with your number 9.
Okay, my number 9, I can't remember the exact game, but it's the zombie game.
Dead of Winter.
Yeah, Dead of Winter.
Yeah, so Dead of Winter came out in 2014. It's by Plaid Hat Games. And that I think, is an excellent choice. I guess say a couple words on why you like Dead of Winter.
Well, I'm a big fan of The Walking Dead show. And this game, I feel like, is almost like I get to be a character now of The Walking Dead. And what I like best about it is there could be a secret saboteur in your group where you think they're part of the good guys. And in reality, everybody has their own mission at the end of the game. So you might be a good guy, but someone in your camp might be out for themselves and trying to sabotage you guys. And so you're also having to fight off zombies and get all these missions. But you really got to be careful for the sneaky ones.
I agree. And I kind of had this premise that Jennifer's, the weight of the game she would select would be sort of, I said, you know, introductory to medium. But I would say Dead of Winter, it's a medium weight game, I would say, pretty substantially. And I definitely would say Voyages of Marco Polo is a medium weight game, even could be up towards advanced. There's a lot going on in Dead of Winter. Like Jennifer said, you each have different, usually two different characters going on. I think the theming of Dead of Winter is what really kind of brings it to life. The Secret Saboteur is an interesting mechanic. The Crossroads cards, I think we both, when they pop up, so that's a deck of cards that want, if something triggers, the game can kind of change on its head, which is a very neat mechanic. It was kind of unique to Dead of Winter, and I hope to see them use it in games in the future that they're going to be releasing. But it's a game that's kind of dripping with theme. Again, there probably is a betrayer, but you have your own individual goals to look suspicious along the way. And how long would you say it usually takes us to play that game?
Maybe an hour.
Yeah, it's about an hour to an hour and a half. So a couple of weeks ago, we played Battlestar Galactica. For the first time, which Battlestar Galactica is kind of the grandfather of these betrayer games, it and Shadows Over Camelot. they were one of the first two. Those two were kind of the first ones to introduce this trader mechanic. And I guess you can go ahead and say your impressions of Battlestar Galactica.
I liked parts of it, but I thought it was way, way too long.
Yeah, so we, again, it was our first game, which usually is at the best judge, and the individual teaching us the game had only played it once herself, so the rules weren't exactly streamlined for us. But it took us about 3 hours, and, you know, just in thought process, and you can see if you agree, it felt like to me, you know, like we could play Dead of Winter and Stone Age in the same amount of time it took us to play Battlestar Galactica. And I'd much rather play those two than just Battlestar.
Yeah.
So I did get a point for Dead of Winter, and Dead of Winter was the game that I replaced Stone Age with. And I actually had Dead of Winter as your number 9.
Yeah.
So I did pretty good there. Okay, let's move on to your number 8.
Okay, number 8 is Splendor.
Yeah, this was the one that when I just looked at my Board Game Geek list to put it on, but didn't. I made a big mistake not putting that on my list. So go ahead and speak about Splendor.
Well, Splendor kind of reminds me a little bit of Solitaire, kind of, where you have to get combinations of cards to try to stack up and win points, and it's so different. That's one of those games that every single time you play, you think you have a strategy that's going to help you win, and then it just all goes to crap. And so it's really hard to just pick one game. And a good example of that is my sister, who her favorite game is Uno, and she beats the crap out of me every time in Splendor. And I just can't figure out how she's smarter at that than I am.
Yeah, I think there's a few different strategies that you can utilize in Splendor. One, you can get the nobles, the three guys at the top. So you can go for those, or you can go, in Splendor, there's three levels of cards, and it's essentially a resource management game where you have to get certain, once you are able to obtain those gems, then you can buy gems, gain points, so on and so forth. So you basically build an engine type mechanism. Now, what would you say about the theme of Splendor? Would you say it's very strong or not really?
Well, my thing with Splendor is I like to play it, just not all the time. I like to play it in bits and pieces. Because it can get kind of dull for a while sometimes, but I would say for the most part it's a pretty fun game. It can go quick if you start building your resources pretty quick.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't think the theme matters too much with Splendor. It's good because the theme is kind of non-existent, to be honest. There's a little painted on, but nothing really substantial. But yeah, Splendor, I think a couple of other things going forward is, like Jennifer said, we've played it a lot with a variety of people, and everyone seemed to enjoy it when we've played it together. In addition, we've also, I think it's a game that plays really well where it scales. So if me and Jennifer play it together, it's fun to play because some of the poker chips of the gems are removed. You're not playing with as many. It's a 2-4 player game, and it scales very well between each of those player counts, where even if you're playing with 4 players, shouldn't take you more than 30 minutes to play. I kind of consider it a super filler, where it's a substantial game, but not too substantial. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and in fact, I added that to my list at the very last minute. I actually swapped it out with one of my honorary mentions, which now I go back and forth because now I'm thinking, well, maybe I should have just kept it on the honorary mention and have something else, just because it is one of those games where, yeah, I mean, it's fun and it's easy, but once you start playing more of the more challenging and fun games, you're like, well, that game really is not so great after all because there's so much better. But if you're starting out and you're looking for something a little bit better than Ticket to Ride, this is definitely something that you can kind of help bridge the gap to the next level.
Yeah, I think this is about on the same way as a Ticket to Ride. Great game. I mean, this one actually, I should have mentioned Dead of Winter would be in my top 10 games right now. And Splendor actually would be up there too, just because I think it's a great, you know, this is a game I can bring to work, game we can play with a family, game me and Jennifer can just play if we have 30 minutes together. I think it's a really kind of interesting game. It came out in 2014. It was nominated for the Spiel des Jahres Game of the Year, German Game of the Year. And actually, I haven't told you this, but there's supposedly coming out called Caravan, which Tom Vassell, the Dice Tower guy, he has said is a Splendor killer. So he says it's kind of a little bit more challenging, but sort of like how Marco Polo's a little bit of an advancement of Stone Age. Caravan supposedly is a little advanced on Splendor. So I think that'll probably be a purchase for us down the line.
Yeah.
All right, moving right along. That was your number 8. Let's go to your number 7.
My number 7 is King of Tokyo.
Yes, and this is another... I think I may have predicted that to be your... Yes, I did. I predicted that one right on the dot, too. Number 7. Go ahead and talk about King of Tokyo.
I think what helps me like King of Tokyo was I was already familiar with the game Yahtzee as a kid. And King of Tokyo is very similar to that. Now, I don't really get into the whole theme of Godzilla and all those little characters and whatever. I just kind of look at what the cards can do. But what I like about King of Tokyo is you can be up top and be dominant, and the next minute you're barely alive. And what I do like the best about King of Tokyo is when you're actually the king in the city, you can delve out punishments to everybody and not just one person. So you can really lay it on somebody if you want to.
Yeah, it's a really neat kind of push your luck where taking damage from everybody, but if you just hang in the city, you get 2 victory points when it becomes your turn, and then like Jennifer said, you can really delve out a lot of punishment. Tokyo was probably one of the first, I guess, strategy games we played, right up there, Ticket to Ride, and it's a blast. I think everything you said about apply to King of Tokyo, right? As far as about 30 minutes, scales well with any player count, can play it with a variety of people.
Yeah, I definitely say it's more of like a commoner's game where it's, you know, because so many people are familiar with how Yahtzee works.
Right.
And when you explain this game to them, they can kind of make those connections. Well, this is something similar I already know. The only thing that's really different is understanding how the character cards come into play, and then just making sure they understand how the dice works, which my favorite. I love dice games.
Yeah. Yep. I'm sure I took that into account as I figured there'd be a few more of those coming up. Now, King of Tokyo came out in 2011. They just came out with a second edition with new artwork. It's produced by Yellow. And Richard Garfield was the designer of King of Tokyo, and he actually was the person that designed Magic the Gathering. So he's got that's a pretty impressive resume that he has King of Tokyo and Magic the Gathering both together. But yeah, King of Tokyo is a lot of fun. I guess we should have mentioned probably at the beginning, Jen, talk just a little bit about the games you played in. Kind of the type of games you were playing as a family growing up.
A lot of things like Aggravation, Uno Attack, games like that. More like you compete with other people. But one of my favorite games as a kid was Aggravation.
Yeah, so kind of, you know, your general Parker Brothers, Milton Bradley, that type of board game. Same case for me and my brother, who's also into board games now. And we would play a lot of Clue. We play this game called Masterpiece. So sort of your big box games you'd find at Walmart. And now we in a whole new spectrum with the games we play currently. So King of Tokyo was Jennifer's number 7. Now let's get to your number 6 to finish out the first half of your top 10.
Number 6, I have Happy Pigs.
Oh, man. Happy Pig. This is an upset for me. I thought about it, but I didn't think top 10. So I'm going to talk about Happy Pigs.
So Happy Pigs is basically you're a farmer, and you're in charge of growing and selling pigs to make money. Whoever has the most money at the end of the game wins. But while you're growing pigs, you have to also continue to buy farmland and make sure they're vaccinated, because if they're not vaccinated, they will die. But they also have to mate and make babies. And while all that's going on, each round you get bonuses. And so sometimes the bonuses, you know, each adult pig, if they mate, they'll have an extra baby. So you're like, oh gosh, I gotta help him try to get these to be adult pigs. And so you got that going on. And then, and you also never know where other people's heads are in that game. And so when you make your bid on what you're going for that round, you also gotta think, well, you know, is this other player going to go for food? Because if they are, I have to split it with them. So maybe I need to wait and get food next time. So you really gotta pay attention to what's going on with your farm, but you really gotta pay attention to what's going on and see what other people's heads are at.
Yeah, so this is a game, we've played it, what, 3 or 4 times now?
Probably.
Yeah, my brother just bought this one about a month and a half ago, so it's a relatively new game. And this was one I didn't like to enjoy that well. I thought it'd be kind of one of those, hit once or twice, and then we never see or think about it again. I mean, sometimes we have that. Like, I doubt this game will be on your list, Mysterium.
Nah.
Okay. Like, Mysterium was a game I bought. It had a lot of buzz at Gen Con last year. I was excited about, and we've played it 2 or 3 times, and I would say it's all right to good. But it's, you know, it's not one of our favorites. It's never kind of one of our go-tos. Would you agree?
Well, I just don't like games where you rely on somebody else giving you clues, because what you might think is a clue doesn't really make sense to me, or, you know, right, vice versa. And with me being a teacher, I always try to think outside the box to try to reach everybody, where maybe someone who's not used to being in the teacher type role, they might think more narrow-mindedly. So it can be frustrating sometimes to play games like that.
Yes, I agree with that. So I kind of equated Happy Pigs to that when Colton, my brother, first brought it out for us to play. But it's a really fun, actually kind of thinky economic game. It's a, you know, a cute theme of you're a pig farmer. You got these animated pigs. This is also produced by Yellow. I should mention. So it has, you know, kind of a really cute theme with birds and the pigs and the farm and everything else. But you really got to think about how you're utilizing your farmland, when to kind of grow your pigs, when to cash them in, use your economic resources to the best of their ability. I mean, I think this is a game that actually could be taught in like a finance class. It's that heavy. It's a really, really interesting game. I don't know if for myself it would my top 10, but
your thing is you don't like a game if you can't win, and this game I kick your ass in, so I think that's why you just don't like
it. No, that's not true. That's not true.
Because you get frustrated every time we play. You're like, I just can't figure it out.
Yeah, I do get frustrated with games like that. I will say this is why this is my critique of Happy Pigs would be my critique of a game that may or may not be on your list. I'm kind of leaning towards not, because we're at the 6 now. But a game called Viceroy, which is also a game we've played a lot. And the reason I don't like those two games is, while I find the decision-making interesting, I also feel like a lot of times you're kind of in your own world. Whereas with Viceroy, you're building up a pyramid. With Happy Pigs, you're kind of building up your farm. So for a lot of the game, I mean, there's a lot going on that I'm thinking about in my farm, but I'm not necessarily know what Jennifer's doing or what her strategy is. So I typically seem to like games more where there's all that interaction, where I can view somebody else's strategy and recognize that, and then either adapt or try to overtake that strategy with a superior one. And Happy Pigs and Viceroy both are very strategic, but I also think there's kind of that solitaire element that kind of is just a tad off-putting for me. And those are two games I really like, but would never be kind of in my top 10. So that's the way it is. I mean, I'll freely admit I'm not very good at games like that, but that's not the sole reason I dislike them. You agree or disagree?
You
still think
you
I'm a sore listener, sore
Whatever
loser?
You say.
Okay. Well, while we kind of hash that out, we're through the first half of Jennifer's list. So now let's listen to some advertisements from Place to Be Nation, and we'll be back with her top five. Okay, you ready to jump right back in?
Yeah.
All right. All right, welcome back, Place to Be Nation. We are back with my wife Jennifer's top 10 board games of all time. We're into the top five. Please visit placetobenation.com, your one-stop shop for your pop culture world. If you're shopping on Amazon, please use our referral link. All you have to do is go to placetobenation.com. On the right-hand side right there is our Amazon banner. Click that Amazon banner. It takes you right to Amazon.com's homepage. You can shop like normal, no added cost, and it gives us a little bit of a kickback to help manage our server fees. So, Jennifer, now it's time to move into the top five. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty. Go ahead with number five.
I think top five is a big favorite for almost everybody in my family who's not huge into games, but it's Sheriff of Nottingham.
Yep, and this was... I tell you what, this was one that I went back and forth on, and I kind of surprisingly, probably to you, I did not put it in what I thought would be your top 10. So talk about Sheriff of Nottingham a little bit.
Well, one thing I really like about Sheriff of Nottingham is you can really bluff your way, and if you have people in your family who's real gullible, like you can really mess with their head and try to sneak stuff through. It's also good, like, trying to figure out who you can make deals with, who can get things through. But one thing I really like about this game is you can really manipulate some people.
Yes. So came out in 2014. It's produced by Arcane Wonders. It's the first game in the Dice Tower Essentials line. And it was a little bit of a reworking of an old game called Robin Hood. So, the basic gist of Sheriff of Nottingham is each round, somebody is the sheriff. You're trying to sneak goods by the sheriff. You can be honest in this game, or you can try to sneak through contraband. You can even bribe the sheriff. So it's a game that has a little bit of a push-your-luck mechanism, also has a good bit of social deduction. When you think somebody's bluffing, when you think they're telling the truth, because there can be a pretty harsh penalty if you call out someone and they're telling the truth. By the same token, if you try to sneak by a lot of and you get caught, that's a pretty harsh penalty too. A really interesting game, a game I completely enjoy. One thing I like about this game is, like Jennifer said, you can kind of bluff your way through. If you are gullible, though, and if you are kind of a not a great liar, I like this game, too, because you can be completely honest in this game and be competitive. And then if you pick your spot and maybe only lie once, that can put you over the top. And I really enjoy that about this game. I think some of the other social deduction games like One Night Ultimate Werewolf or The Resistance, I know, especially when me and Jennifer play together, we know each other so well. A lot of times I really feel like she kind of knows I'm the bad guy right out of the gate, which can be frustrating even if I try to put kind of my poker face on. We just know each other that well. And Sheriff of Nottingham, I think, that's that. And also I think it's to your advantage if you're sort of seen as a distrustful person. Jennifer knows I rant and rave about this, but we played another game called Cash and Guns, which I do not enjoy because I think if you're seen as a quote-unquote distrustful person, like I somehow inevitably am, you get picked on. And in Cash and Guns, there's really nothing you can do to mitigate that. Where in Sheriff of Nottingham, again, if you play a long con game where you're honest, and then sneak through the company, you can reap the rewards and end up winning the game. Anything else you'd share?
Nope.
So yeah, that's another game that. Now this one, I wouldn't say you'd want to play it with three, right? You'd want four.
Yeah, I think four or more is even better.
Yeah, I mean, it only goes up to five. I would say five's the absolute best player count. Four is still very good. But this is one of those games where you can't, like me and Jennifer, most of the other games we could play just me and her. This one you cannot. It's three to five. So you do have to have kind of either a family or friend atmosphere in order to play this one. So now the top four, go ahead with your number four.
Five Tribes.
Five Tribes. That was the one I predicted, and I think I didn't. I predicted it to be your number five, but go ahead and talk about Five Tribes.
Five Tribes is kind of similar, I guess, a little bit to the Marco Polo Stone Age type game where you're trying to get land area and resources, and again, at the end of the game, it's whoever has the most money wins. So you're trying to put your eggs in every pot, so to say, so you can try to get a little bit of everything.
Yeah, so I think the coolest thing about Five Tribes is that you utilize Mancala mechanic. Is that something that you like about the game?
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, if you're trying to bridge the gap, if you're familiar with how Mancala works, then that's something with this game you can easily tie those skills into.
Yeah, I think it's pretty neat. And this again is a lot. There's a lot going on in this game. You can each of the meeples on the board is a different kind of strategy to use. So Jennifer will test. I go for the market strategy a lot. So you can go that route. You can do a war-heavy strategy. You can do a noble strategy, or elders. Elders is what they call their strategy. And you can also, store up all them gens that you buy throughout the game to give you powers and points. So a lot going on in this game. It's by Days of Wonder. Would you say Days of Wonder is probably your favorite publisher that you know of and recognize?
They make Quadropolis?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Days of Wonder, the games that we've played is Quadropolis, Pride, Small World, Five Tribes. I'm trying to think if we've played. Those are the other ones. They also make Colosseum, which we played. I think they usually have really cool component theme, just a well-done publisher overall. Five Tribes came out in 2014. It's designed by Bruno Cathala, who's a highly known designer. I think he hit this one out of my park. This one would be in my top five. This is one of my top five board games. Did you think it'd be that high for me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this one, and again, this one is one, some people don't like playing this one. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I like it. But see, the way my brain works as a woman, too, I like complex thinking. I'm able to multitask, and I think if you're not a good multitasker, this game might be a little bit of a challenge for you.
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned that. So, a couple things on that. So, one, it does this game, each turn starts with an auction mechanic. If you're playing with two people only, you have two kind of guys that go out there. You take two turns in one round versus one turn, three or four. But this is a game that the other critique about has been prone to what's called analysis paralysis, where you take a long time to think about your turns and stuff like that. But I would say in game group, which again is mainly my brother and my sister-in-law, when we do play, this is one that probably only takes us, 45 minutes to an hour, correct?
Yeah, but I think it's because we know it so well. So we already kind of know what our, how we bring the game to life. You know, you have your way, you know, I have my way. We just kind of focus on that.
Right. But I'd still say if you're kind of, I mean, I think with this game, it can be overwhelming, your first playthrough or even your second one. But I would recommend not getting too bogged down with that. I think any strategy is a viable one in this game. I think it's very well weighted. So I wouldn't get down to that. This game, I should mention too, again, I would say along with Marco Polo and Dead of Winter have been the most three complex games Jennifer's mentioned so far.
I think this one, the easier of the three.
You think of those three, this one's the easiest?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would still put this one in the medium weight class, though. So, four. Now let's get to your top three.
Number three, Mystery of the Abbey.
Mystery of the Abbey. Discuss that one, also by Days of Wonder.
I just love this game. I love everything about it because I love how, well, this game, after you play it a couple times, you start learning other strategies how to play this game, like trying to throw people off the scent. You can try to hoard certain cards where, people might think they know the suspect, but this whole time you've really had it, you just haven't, revealed it. And it's another one of those kind of games where, like Sheriff Nottingham, if you know your people really well that you're playing with, you can kind of mess with their heads a little bit, and you really get people going on. You start throwing out the names of certain suspects and kind of, joking about it a little bit, and they'll just start following your lead, and the whole time you have the card in your hand, and they have no clue that you're really playing them the whole time.
Yeah, you especially like doing that to me when we play this game. So Mystery of the Abbey essentially is like Clue on steroids. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it's, I don't know, this game I just really, really love because, I mean, there's just so many ways that you can, try to have a competitive edge of this game. You can go after other people's cards, or you can choose to try to get rid of your cards to have chances to go into super powerful rooms to get an advantage. And so, everybody likes to play this game a little different.
Yeah, yeah. So this one, there's a monk that murdered somebody. You have I think it's, 24 suspects, something around there. You each get a nice, beautiful sheet, which, again, Days of Wonder, their component quality. Beautiful sheet to circle out your monks. The thing I like it about better than Clue is the board is tighter, so you can go across the whole board in one round of the game. It doesn't have the Clue problem where sometimes you know who the murderer is, what they used, and what room they're in. But unfortunately, you're on the opposite side of the board, and you have to go to that room to make your information. So by the time you make it over there, rolling, your D6 and chugging along, people are usually able to figure out kind of where you're heading. And can beat you to the punch multiple times. But yeah, this game can be just a ton of fun. It came out, actually was released in 1995. The Days of Wonder version is from 2003. And that's an old game by modern board games. But I would say this one is one that doesn't get talked up enough. If you are entrenched in the board game media like the Dice Tower or some of the other kind of well-known board game personalities. I mean, it's people like this one, but I really don't think they give it enough credit and kind of forgotten it because I think this is a tremendous game. This one, again, like five in my personal top five. I mean, Clue was always my favorite game as a kid, so I just love that type of game. But yeah, this would probably be my number three as a game overall right now, if I had to pick one. And I love everything about it. We've played it multiple times, and I'd like to play it like right now. This one, again, though, is one you need to have at least three to play. But I think it does well up to, we've played it with six, the full complement, and it seemed to do well and didn't take more than an hour.
And one thing I think with this game that I meant to say with King of Tokyo is, if you're trying to play games as a family and your child's maybe fourth, fifth, or middle school and they're kind of thinking board games are lame, but you still want to have a family night, then you need to try to introduce them to King of Tokyo, introduce them to Mystery of the Abbey, because basically, just take the same skill concept as Clue, but it's more interesting now, and you can really try to get those kids who normally don't want to hang out with their parents, they might like these kind of games.
I agree. Totally agree with that. I had, she would pick that one. I had it a little bit lower, but, and now I'm conflicted because there's two games that I think would be your top two, but then I'm really surprised that a game didn't make your top 10. So there's going to be an upset here. So I guess go ahead with your number.
Okay, my number two is Summoner Wars.
Ooh, number. I thought that would be your number one. All right, Beth.
Maybe a year ago it would have been, but I've been exposed to much better things now.
Oh, okay. Well, not too much better things, because this is still your number two. But talk about Summoner Wars. I was coy not to mention it when we first started the podcast, but I would say this was the game that kind of got us into this hobby. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, for me, just because I don't do the whole Dungeons, Dragons, I don't do any of that kind of stuff.
Like, this is not a theme you would typically be drawn to.
No, and that's the thing, is I have to kind of disassociate myself with the characters and their whole thing, because then it just gets a little too, but kind of nerdy for me, because I'm just not really into all that kind of stuff, and so I do like the concept, I very much like chess type games where, like Tupac says, your every move is a calculated step. I mean, that's basically what it is with Summoner Wars, is you really gotta try to outsmart your opponent. And that's one of my favorite things about playing this game against Chad, is because when I first met Chad, I thought he was one of the smartest people ever. But this game, I really feel like I can hold my own with him, and it's really helped, I think, build my mental stability too. But again, if the person you're playing with is not really into the whole magic scene and all those little characters, just tell them not to read into it too much. Just kind of go with the card side effects and kind of just play it that way.
Yeah, I think even beyond that, you can get into the themes, right? Like even if you're not into that, you can see that a faction like the Jungle Elves, they're very kind of fast and cunning faction.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have no, like, to me, like, elves, that's not that big of a deal. It's some of the other characters they have, it's just like real far-fetched kind of thing.
Like the sand goblins,
yeah,
and stuff like that.
Just different things like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a fantasy realm theme. But the thing, and you know, this I probably said it on podcast before, but I'll flat out, this is by far my number one. Absolutely my number one game. I haven't met an equal to it. We've played it 75-80 times now, and like Jennifer said, I don't know exactly what our win loss record is against each other, but it's pretty even. I would say at worst it's 55-45, just a tremendously game. This is a game where when I'm entrenched and playing it, it probably takes us, what, about 30 to 45 minutes to play?
Yeah, because one thing Chad always tells me is I take too long, but I'm really trying to calculate my move, not what my current move is, but really what's my plan B if my plan A doesn't work. So sometimes it does take me a minute. The thing about it, is this really the best move? Am I going to be this gutsy, or do I need to wait and just see what kind of happens? Because my strategy with this game has really come a long way from when we first played.
Yeah, and I think you have to know which faction you're playing with, and as you get more familiar with the factions, you can see kind of what their strengths and weaknesses is. Even like when we decided to, I can't remember who figured it out first, but when we started doing friendly fire, whereas we kind of kill our own members to build up our magic pile.
Yeah, you do that. I don't really do that.
but that's an interesting kind of strategy. You can break the game and sort of,
well,
it's a viable strategy.
About this game is when it kind of gets stale to you, do the deck building where you can combine.
Yes. So this game, and it's done now. They released the last 8 decks at Gen Con yet, but so far me and Jennifer have absolutely everything for this game, which overall is 40 summoners together, which is kind of astounding that they have 40 separate decks, and then there's also 8 reinforcement decks that you can add in. So just a ton of variety. And this, I feel like this is sort of one of those evergreen games, if you agree with this, where I can see us playing this, you know, 10 years down the line. And even now, we may not pull it out that much. I think when we do pull it out, I'm always like, yeah, that was a really kind of fun, challenging game.
Yeah.
Hopefully this is one, you know, as most of you know, I have a little son now, and another one on the way, and this is one that I would like to play with them when they get older. Probably I would say, 12 would be the earliest for a game like this?
Yes, probably 7th grade.
Yes, but it's something I'm looking forward to, and I hope, because yeah, the chess aspect of this, technically this game does go up to 4 players, but it's a 2-player game. I mean, I would play it anything else but 2, which I know can be restrictive, but I think if you're looking into a deep chess-like game that you can play with your significant other or somebody that you're going to be playing a lot with, this is a really great game you can dive into, and you can even just get one of the starter packs, which I think are $14.99, just to try it out. You know, if you don't like it, it's not that much of an investment. So Summer Wars, Jennifer's number 2, my number 1. I thought it would be her number 1, but the time has come for her to reveal her number 1, which I have a pretty good indication what that game is, but she can go ahead and tell you now.
As of about a month or 2 ago, now my number 1 game is Favor of the Pharaoh.
No.
Yeah.
So, wait a minute. So, where is Legendary?
It was on the list for a while, but I don't know. I love Legendary, but I love Favor of the Pharaoh. I love the dice manipulations. I've really enjoyed that game. It's really gotten to the top of my list is about 2 months ago.
Okay, well, talk about Favor of the Pharaoh. I'm in shock.
Well, what I like about Favor of the Pharaoh, and I really like to play with 3 or 4 people, but like I've said many times, I just love a good dice game. And that's what this game is you're rolling your luck. And if you get some good rolls, you can move up the pyramid really quickly. And the whole point of the game is you want to try to out-roll everybody else and try to get and go after the queen. And that's how you win the game. And it's different. Every time you play it, it's different every time because it's based off the dice.
Right. So this also utilizes the Yahtzee mechanic. Favor of the Pharaoh came out in 2015, produced by Bezier Games, designed by Tom Lehman. Yahtzee mechanic, you kind of recruit extra dice or powers as you level up the pyramid to gain the favor of the Pharaoh. I mean, I've really enjoyed this game too. I would put this one kind of along with Happy Pigs as a game that I thought I would enjoy, but I didn't think I'd enjoy it as much as I do. Would you agree with that? I mean, I wouldn't say the theme of this one sort of jumps out of the box, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just really enjoy it. I think my thing is with Legendary is we've played it so much now, it's almost like it's just easy.
Yeah, so, all right, well,
now, I threw you for a loop. I told you I would.
Yeah, so this, I'm all out of sorts now, because I was certain Legendary was. But let's focus on Favor of the Pharaoh, then we'll discuss Legendary. Now, like playing it with 3 or 4 people more than 2, but
yeah,
we have
I
liked it with 2. We've played it with 2 before. I mean, I would say 4 is the best, but I didn't think it was terrible at 2. I thought it was good at 2.
I just like a good sweet victory, and I feel like when you have more people, there's more things on the board that you can go after. With two people, the, I don't know if you'd call them resources, I guess, are very limited.
Yeah.
So you really got to fight for it to get something, versus when you have three or four people, you know, somebody gets a certain resource that you want, then you can either try to go after it again, or like, you know, this weekend when we played, I knew some people were going after a certain resource. I didn't really need it, but hey, I took it from them because I knew that's what they wanted, so I screwed them a little bit that way.
Yeah, this, and one thing I'll say about this is this game has a really interesting end mechanic that gets triggered, where once somebody claims the queen, you do what's called a final roll-off. And the last game of this we played, I got four really lucky rolls, and to gain the queen, you have to have seven in a row of the same. So I had a really good kind of hot streak, and by my, I think, fourth or fifth turn, I was able to claim the queen. So I thought I'd ran away with the game. But even then, I mean, it was a lot closer than I thought it'd be, right? And there's been times where someone's gained the queen and actually lost. And so this is a game where the end mechanic I can see sometimes being a little frustrating if you think you've played a really good game. But I like this game for the fact that you're never kind of out of it in general. You usually always at least have a chance to win in that final roll-off. All right, Favor of the Pharaoh, number one. That was one I actually had her, Jennifer pegged for her number three, because I knew she really enjoyed that one lately. Every time we have a game night, she requests it, but really, really shocking. So, okay, I guess let's get to your honorable mentions now.
Well, and that's what's interesting about this is I also had Pandemic on my first list of 10, and then I decided to take it off and even take it off the honorable mention. I really like playing Pandemic Legacy, but I don't like the fact that it's a one-and-done game. I think that's what made me decide that I was going to take it off.
Yeah. I had that one to be your number 10. And I didn't kind of know where you would go with that. But, yeah, I mean, that's kind of an interesting thing, and it feels like more... That's sort of the new thing, is these legacy games are really hot now. Pandemic Legacy just came out last year, has done great. I think 500,000 copies sold, which is huge for a board game. It's number one on the Board Game Geek charts, which is astounding. And now there's C, is kind of the cream of the crop as far as hype games for 2016 that just came out at this year's Gen Con by the same designer, Rob Davio. Pandemic Legacy was also designed by Matt Leacock, who designed Pandemic, the original. But yeah, that was a game me and Jennifer played together. It was just us two doing the campaign. And it's a really exhilarating ride when you're doing it. But it is a game where when you're done with that box. So while I don't feel like we were cheated, because we got 19 games out of that box, which is a good ratio for how much you pay. You know, $2 a game, not that bad. $1 a person, so that's $1 per hour. It is a game that you kind of forget about, and in a ranking system like this, it's tough for me to rank. I don't know where I would have that one. I may have that one as my number four game, just because Jennifer can bag me up that I was sort of losing my mind throughout parts of that game, correct?
Oh, yeah, you thought it was Christmas morning every time.
Yeah, so we don't want to spoil it, but there's definitely certain things that happen in that game that just changed the game, and I was loving it, so I answered that, and I was glad we did that kind of as a couple. I think you either want to go into that game with a dedicated group that will play every month, or just don't play it. You definitely want a dedicated group for a game like that, so you can kind of live and die together. But yeah, so I thought that might sneak into your list, but I can understand why it didn't. What are some of your other games you considered? Now, you didn't, I will say... Before you name all some, you didn't have any what are called fillers.
Oh, I have one on my honorary mention. It was my 10, and I replaced it with Stone Age.
Okay, what was the filler you had? Sushi Go?
Nope.
Or Deep Sea Adventure?
Nope, Bang.
Bang the Dice game.
The Sheriff game. Sheriff
Yeah.
Cowboy game.
Yeah, Bang the Dice game. So Bang the Dice game, because there's a card game that we haven't played, Bang the card game. I played it, but you have not. So yeah, Bang the Dice game is a fun filler, 10 to 15 minutes, hidden roll, but usually you know which every roll is, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a good bit of fun. All right, name some of your other ones on your list.
All right, coming around on liking Cosmic Encounter.
Oh, now that's kind of a surprise. I didn't think you would say that.
I really liked it the last time we played because I think it finally clicked for me and I could start playing strategically. Thing that threw me off of the last, I was going to win, but I forgot about one of the super secret powers I had. Right. And if I had remembered to play that on the person I was battling, then I would have won the complete game. And I really kicked myself because I thought for sure I had it. And then I went and forgot to pull my power. And so it's one of those games where it's a lot going on. So yeah, I really pay attention.
Yeah. And so Cosmic Encounter is another game that would be in my top 10, pure negotiation, but a lot of fun. Did you have any more on your honorable
yes,
mention?
I struggled not putting this one on there. Mission Red Planet.
Mission Red Planet. That was one I didn't think about, but that's one that's been a lot of fun. We've played it 3 or 4 times now, and yeah, I'd like to play it more. I guess talk a little bit about it. It's a game you're really good at. You won every time.
You basically have missions, and you're going to Mars or to different planets, and you're trying to spread your astronauts around. But at the same time, you have different characters who play in order, so you really got to think, okay, well, this person's already played captain, so I can go ahead and play my captain so I can try to move around where the spaceships are going.
Yeah, this is a game that has some character selection and some area control combined. Really fun game. I would say it's simpler than a game you're not quite as high on as me, Libertalia. Would you agree with that?
Yeah,
I mean, I like Libertalia. Libertalia has, I think, 30 characters, and Mission Red Planet you're dealing with 8 or 9. So it's a little simplified. Once one character's used, they're gone unless they add in all the other characters, and to do that turn's not very strong. So that's a really fun game. Was just reprinted last year by Fantasy Flight. Really well done. Also done by, now, I didn't know this, Jim, but Mission Red Planet, the two people that designed it, one was the guy that designed Five Tribes, Bruno Cathala. The other one was one that designed Mystery of the Abbey, Bruno Faduti. So, makes sense. Any more on your honorable mentions?
Quadropolis.
Quadropolis is one we got this year. Pretty fun. I like it.
We need to try the next level. I think it's gotten kind of stale, so we need to take it up a notch.
Yeah, it's probably one we should bust out again, because we played it a lot when I first got it. I mean, we probably played it, oh man, what, it's probably 7 or 8 times in the first month. So it got a lot of play quick, and now it's sort of falling off. Yeah, really fun game. Would like to play it more to see what it is. I mean, I got it ranked as an 8 right now. I feel pretty comfortable with that ranking. I think it's very good to great. Probably wouldn't be my top 10, but strong choice.
And then my last game, it's more of like if you maybe want to play with your family and you get some kids who are a little more mature, but you know, you still want to try to have game night. But I really like Camel Up.
Camel Up. Camel Up is a game that, like Mystery of the Abbey, was one that, and this one flourished in 2014. The Camel Up is one that I think most people reviewed it and said, yeah, it's, you know, good to okay, fun. But then it just got forgotten about. But to me, this game has a good bit of strategy that you wouldn't think about at the end. And yeah, it's not a complete brain burn type game, but I think it has more depth than it gets credit for. And I do think this is a type of game where the more you play it, the more you enjoy it. Where my kind of 5th, 6th, and 7th plays of this game, have been enriching where, okay, this ain't just kind of a fun race where you get to roll dice out of a funky-looking pyramid, you know? It actually has some strategic elements to it.
Yep.
Okay, so let me just mention a couple games I had. So actually, let me just do my tally. So I had Summoner Wars, Favor of the Pharaoh, 2, Five Tribes, 3, King of Tokyo, 4, Mystery of the Abbey, 5, Dead of Winter, 6. So I picked 6 out of your 10. The games that I didn't predict were Legendary, which we talked about. I'm still in shock over. Pandemic Legacy, which we talked about. And then 2 we haven't talked about, and I was surprised you didn't mention them. One, well, you did mention one in passing, Ticket to Ride.
Yeah.
I didn't know where you'd land on that one. I guess you just feel like you've played better games now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's sort of, Ticket to Ride's kind of like your ultimate gateway game, intro game, and I mean, I'm sort of in the same boat. I mean, it's a classic. I like to have fun playing it, but yeah, it wouldn't make my top 10. And then the other one, which I figured you'd mention, is Rampage.
Oh, yeah.
So, Rampage, I would say you like that more than anybody else.
I'd say, yeah, if I could take off Splendor and put on Rampage, that would probably make more sense.
Yeah, well, no take back, Seizure. Your list is official now. But
I didn't
yeah.
see Rampage on our list, though, of all the games we had that you had before we played. I didn't see it on there.
Yeah.
So I would have put it on there if I saw it.
Yeah, I kind of screwed you there because, no, it's on there.
Are you sure? It's
on there because it's not, I showed her my Board Game Geek list to go off of.
No, you told me to click the ones you own, remember? And that's the one I went off of.
Oh, no, I said your place. Yeah, you should have clicked your place on that.
Yeah, I clicked the one you own, so that's why I missed over that one.
Okay, yeah, sorry. Yeah, no, Rampage is a, well, and also in the Geek, it's named Terran Meeple City. Because of the copyright issues. But, yeah, I mean, Rampage, I thought, is pretty fun. I mean, it's a fun concept. I would say, for me, the only thing I don't like about Rampage is if you lose, you really lose. So it's one of those games where 10 minutes in, I know I'm probably going to lose just because I can't get nothing to collect. And once you're in that, it's kind of frustrating to play for 30 more minutes. You know, when you know you're going to lose, but it's a fun game. I enjoy it. I don't like it as much as you, but I also like that one. Deep Sea Adventure is one I want to shout out. I thought you really liked it, too. I thought it might sneak in as a filler. But yeah, as you can see, there's a wide variety of games that we talked about. So hopefully, again, this will give you some ideas. And I was pretty surprised by the list. I still can't get over Legendary not making it on. that was going to be staying with me, especially since we just bought the new Legendary expansion. So
maybe that's what I need to really like love it again.
Yeah, that because that one utilizes the sidekicks, which I know you like. So
I mean, 2 years ago it would have been my top 5, but I mean, we played it so much. There's so much other new things now.
Yeah. Yep. Well, so that is Jennifer's list of her top 10 board games. Hopefully now you've got some cool ideas. Maybe something was interesting to you that you can go seek out. So I want to thank Jennifer for coming on the podcast to talk and share her list with everybody. How did you like your mating podcast voyage?
Yeah, not so bad.
Yeah, see there. It's not too bad. Now you can see, because she thinks I'm crazy with all the podcasts I've done, guys. So it was nice to kind of the shoes on the other foot now. But for Chad Campbell, signing off. Thank you for listening.